number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we begin yet another week closer and closer to our countdown to kickoff. That is in 2 weeks when we start our NFL previews. We are closer and closer to the start of the season, so keep us along as we roll through the night tonight. And this is how badly I can't wait for this. I like summer, don't get me wrong, but today, on Sunday, I watched three events today on television, and none of them were occurring in the United States. I woke up this morning and I watched the men's final at Wimbledon. And I said last week, I don't watch Wimbledon anymore. I used to watch Wimbledon, but I don't watch it anymore. This morning, I was like, all right, I'll watch Andy Murray. And I don't even know the guy he played. That's how out of touch I am with tennis. I didn't even know the guy's name. I know he's from Canada, but I was just seeing if Andy Murray could pull it out, and he did in three sets. Then later, I was at the gym, and I was watching the Scottish Open while I was chuggling on the treadmill as a fat guy exercising, completely out of breath. I was watching the Scottish Open, hoping I could see some familiar names. Maybe Phil would make a run at the tournament in, you know, getting ready for the British Open that'll be this week at Royal Troon. Watched a little bit of that. And then I got home and I watched the Euro 16 finals between Portugal and France. And I waited and waited and waited to see some scoring. And I didn't get any scoring until 109 minutes in or something along those lines. Anyway, Portugal ends up winning 1-0, and Ronaldo had to leave the game because of a knee injury in like the 20th minute of the match. So I watched three things today. None of them were in the United States. And I wasn't really entertained. Look, the Euro 16 thing, I was trying to explain this to my son because he was like, gee, we just don't, you know, because I just am not into soccer like it, like some of my friends. I go, yeah, it's okay. You know, you don't have to be. I know it's catching on with the young, you know, with the youth. But we were watching it, and I said, look, here's one of the problems that I have with soccer. And again, I get the sport, and I understand its importance, and I understand its popularity. But I think one of the things that drives me crazy is it's not the lack of scoring. I know people will say, like, you know, we just Americans are just, we're into scoring. We want games to be 5-3, and we want games to be 6-4. I don't think it is as much as that as it is, you can go a whole match and have three shots on goal. You can go a whole match and have no shots on goal, like the United States did in their quarterfinal matchup against Argentina, or semifinal matchup in the Copa America. It's like, there's this defensive presence. There's this possession presence in soccer where teams will try to keep more of the ball and they'll, you know, kind of pass it around a little bit. And so we don't even see attempts to score as much as we'd like. I can watch a 1-1 hockey game or a 1-0 hockey game. I can watch a 1-0 baseball game. I can watch a 7-3 football game. It's not my preference, but I can certainly watch it. I don't need the games to be 35-31. I don't need a baseball game to be 10-9. I don't need that. But what I want is the attempt to try to get scoring. Shots on goal, runners on, trying to get hits, scoring, offenses in football, trying to get into the opponent's territory. When I watched this match, I didn't see a lot of that. I saw a lot of possession and defense, which is fine, I guess, if you understand it. And that's why I just wasn't that appealing. But still, I understand the importance of soccer and how big it is. All right, Joe Passoff is going to join us at the bottom of the hour tonight. We're going to talk about the British Open, which is going to take place at Royal Troon this week, and get his thoughts on this. This has been around 100-plus years, the Open Championship. And Troon is kind of an interesting golf course. It's got a very short par 3 eighth hole that's surrounded by bunkers. It kind of goes out and back in like a seaside links. But it hasn't held the British Open since 2004 when Todd Hamilton won it. Phil Mickelson in that tournament played pretty well. So we'll get his thoughts on how the big three, the big four are playing coming into Troon. What's the golf course like? It's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Our telephone number, 800-777-2907, if you'd like to join us tonight. We're also going to get into some Major League Baseball. We're going to talk about the teams as we get in now at the All-Star break. And this is a chance for teams to sort of get the reset button on the first half of the season to sort of analyze where they're at, where they're heading, because the stretch run is coming. It's so funny because it comes so quickly. How many times have we talked about in baseball? And every time that we do our Major League Baseball wrap up or we're talking about some trends in Major League Baseball, you spend so much of the time in early part of the season having to explain that it's early, right? You'll say things like, well, it's April. Oh, well, we've only played 6 weeks of the season. You know, oh, you know, we still got a long way to go. The dog days of summer are still coming. So you see these trends, and you don't want to get too high or get too low on them because you know that there's still so much baseball that can be played. Injuries can occur. Teams fall into a funk. Pitchers fall into a funk, or pitchers come out of nowhere and start pitching well. So whenever you start the season and you start kind of pushing down the trends that you're seeing because there's still a ways to go, before you know it, you're at the All-Star break. And then when you're at the All-Star break, you start going, now I'm starting to see a pattern here. Maybe I'm starting to see a team that is starting to really come together. Early struggles, and then they start playing really, really well, like the Houston Astros are doing right now. Or the immediate hype at the beginning of the season. And then you start seeing a little bit of a decline. And then you start seeing pretty much average win-loss record after the initial ascent, like the Chicago Cubs are doing right now. It's a big win for them today against the Pittsburgh Pirates. So all of a sudden you start seeing these kind of trends and they are playing out. Now we get to the All-Star break. And then after that, you know, here we go. We've got a couple of weeks for August. And then when you're in August, then September is in the stretch run. So start paying attention to that as well. We're going to get into SEC Media Days. That's going to kick off in Hoover, Alabama. Coming up in the next hour, Barrett Salee is going to join us from Bleacher Report. He covers the SEC, really knows the conference well. And we're going to get his take on some of the questions are coming in for the conference. The SEC every single year goes through this where they have their media days. It's a celebration of the conference. Everyone gets high on all of the things that the SEC is touting. These teams are going to be really good. These teams you need to watch out for. These are the really strong players that have got real serious NFL potential. But what oftentimes gets, a lot of times that gets overlooked because it's not going to be on the minds of the conference is that the conference is struggling a bit with some things. Ole Miss is going to have some NCAA investigation, right? They had problems with players and domestic abuse and how it dealt with that. So there's a lot of issues surrounding the conference. It's not that it's immune. You know, the conference isn't immune to trouble. The conference is great and everything, but it's like anything else. It has to go through some growing pains and has to address some of the issues off the field. But this week, make no mistake, this week in Alabama, while those issues are serious enough, I mean, Tennessee just settled with 8 women who filed sexual complaints against the university for covering up things that their football players and athletes had done. Nevertheless, this is the week where this conference takes center stage for everything that it is. Right? You know, national championship Alabama. This is going to be LSU and a Heisman Trophy candidate and Leonard Fournette. You're going to start seeing talks about Tennessee rising back up. You know, there's going to be a lot of conversation about how good the conference is. You know, is the Big Ten closing the gap? Is the Big 12 closing the gap? This is a celebration of the SEC. And while there are problems, and they certainly will be, It's all going to be about, well, how is this team going to respond and how is this team going to act? And it's the second year under Jim McElhain and Kirby Smart's taking over at Georgia and Will Muschamp, what is he going to bring to the table at South Carolina? And is Butch Jones ready to make the jump? That's what this week is going to be all about in Hoover. So Barrett Salee is going to join us at the bottom of the next hour. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit about Major League Baseball. As I said earlier, we are at the halfway point and the Cubs are a concern for me. Because I loved the start that the Chicago Cubs had. I love the fact that they sort of opened up the gates and went off on a 24-6 start or something like that. But since then, they've really struggled. We're going to talk about whether or not this is real. And if you're a Cubs fan, is this something you really worry about? Because if you think about it, this is the kind of stuff that gets magnified when you're a Cubs fan, when you see something like this. And should it be? We'll also talk about the All-Star game coming up this week. I like the All-Star game. I have fun watching it. It's not something I take seriously. I don't even put any stock into the American League, National League home field advantage in the World Series. I think it's kind of silly, but nevertheless, it adds something, I guess, because they haven't gotten rid of that. The Home Run Derby is coming up as well. Baseball is at the break, and is baseball in a good spot right now? We'll kind of go over the standings and make that kind of thought as well. Again, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, and then on the phones at 800-777-2907. And also, with our countdown to kickoff coming up, we do have the team that we are going to start with coming up in 2 weeks. You don't want to miss that. Stick around. I'm Tony D, taking you through the night tonight on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, Joe Passos joins us at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk British Open. They hit the Troon out in Scotland. I love the British Open. I know I like all the golf majors. I love waking up and watching golf. I love it. It's like over at noon. It's great. And they play that on that heather, like that high grass. It's great. I love the British Open. Plus, they don't call it the British Open there. They call it the Open Championship. And if you win it, they send you a letter saying, please refer to this as the Open Championship. It's like, wait a minute, no. Why can't we just have the British Open and the U.S. Open? But that's the way they are. It's 150 years old or whatever, however long it is. And it's, you know, the Open Championship. Champion golfer of the world. It's going on this week at Troon. All right, 800-777-2907. Should I be happy that Derek Jeter got married? Should I be happy for him that Derek Jeter got married to Hannah Davis? Feels like this is a long time coming.
Yeah, I guess it's about time.
Yeah, good for Derek Jeter. He's like 40-something years old. He's had his fun. He's played the field. He's dated some of the more attractive women on the planet. He was Mr. Baseball in New York for 20-plus years. And it's time to settle down. Picked Hannah Davis. Good for him. Good for Hannah Davis. They've been dating a long time. So now she's Mrs. Derek Jeter. She's probably, got the ire of all the women who wanted to be Mrs. Derek Jeter. And now she gets to be him. That's great. Good for him. I don't know, though. It just feels weird Derek Jeter settling down, right? Like, he was like Mr. Bachelor. He was like the Joe Namath of our time. Like, people who watched Joe Namath, you know, in New York City when he was young and a quarterback for the Jets, it's like he was a playboy. That was Joe Namath. He was always out and about. He always had some gorgeous model on his arm. He was the prince of the city. And Derek Jeter was like that for 20 years. He was dating, you know, Scarlett Johansson, Jordana Brewster. I mean, good God, the list goes on and on of all the people that Derek Jeter dates. And then all of a sudden, he hooks up with Hannah Davis and they hang out for a while and now he's getting married. He never seemed like the married type. But I think he did say he wanted a family. So good for him. They can live in that big house in Tampa. So good for Derek Jeter. All right, 800-777-2907. So again, Joe Passoff talking about the British Open coming up at the bottom of the hour. I want to get into Major League Baseball. Do you know 31 home runs were hit today to close out the season? It's a trend we've been talking about. Lots of home runs. 31 on Sunday. So now we're at the halfway point. And I got to tell you, I think baseball's in great shape. I think baseball's in really, really good shape. The one thing about it, though, is that with the playoffs, you know, coming up, I can sense that there's going to be a little nervousness if you're a Chicago Cubs fan, because to open up the way they did, to start off 24-6, something like that, and then to be a little below 500 from that point on, can be really nerve-wracking. You're not getting quality pitching starts. The hitting is down. Sure, you've got all-stars. Dexter Fowler's hurt. But I can sense, if you're a Cubs fan, this getting to a point where you're like, yeah, well, let me get to October, and then I'll tell you how I really feel. I can see this being kind of making you kind of nervous. They were far and away the best team in Major League Baseball for a good portion of the first half of the season. That's not the case anymore. Right, that's not the case. While they still have the best record, you know, one of the best records, they're not San Francisco Giants good at 57-33. The Washington Nationals have a very similar record. The Texas Rangers have a very similar record. So do the Cleveland Indians and the Baltimore Orioles. In fact, the Cubs are not far and away better than anybody right now. They are in the middle of the pack or around the pack of really, really good teams. because of their recent struggles. So I understand, if you're a Cubs fan and you've dealt with the heartache and, you know, ups and downs or whatever, that this could be painful, that this could drive you nuts. But you have a 7-game lead in the division. But it's not about how much you win the division. Let the Cardinals' problem be the Cardinals' problem. Let the Pirates' issues be the Pirates' issues. That's not what the Cubs are looking for. Win the division? Yeah, they'll win the division. Make the playoffs? Absolutely. That's irrelevant. What's relevant is, once we get there, what team do we have? Are we going to still get quality starts from Jake Arrieta? Are we still going to get any starts from John Lester? Is our bats going to fall apart and we're not going to be able to, you know, hit the ball in the postseason? Is the sum of the small things that the Cubs have been doing over the last couple of days and the last couple of weeks going to manifest itself in October? The problem is, no matter what the Cubs do, I think that nervousness is always going to be there. This is an excellent team. This is a team on paper that is really, really good, but yet nothing is guaranteed at all. There is nothing that you can feel really secure in going into the playoffs. The Giants are fantastic. The Nationals have got bats. Any American League opponent they would face in the World Series is going to be very good. And the Cubs aren't far and away better than anybody else right now. Now, I know, the division has had troubles. It's not the same. Cardinals are nipping at your heels. They're just above 500. Pirates kind of the same way. They're just above 500. They haven't gotten any push, and I doubt that they will. But you never know. You have a couple of these bad weeks. You never know. If the Pirates had won today, it would have been a serious swing. It would have been, what, 5.5 games?
Yeah.
For the Pirates going into the second half of the season? That's a very good resurgence by Pittsburgh in the division. 5.5 games is nothing to sneeze at. You better be careful of a team like that. So the Cubs will, I don't think they're going to get the big push, but you can't have bad weeks. You can't get swept by the Mets. You can't lose 9 of 10. You can't do any of those things. They're 2-8 over their last 10 games.
That's
ridiculous.
Why I'm so worried about the Cubs is, their last 21 starts leading up to the All-Star break by their starting pitching, they have over a 6 ERA.
Yeah,
and they're only getting worse. And what scares me is older pitchers like Jason Hamill, John Lester, and John Lackey are probably getting tired. And I don't know that an All-Star break does it. They've thrown around a 6-man rotation, and the guy they had penciled in for it has been shellacked the last 3 times he's been out there.
The thing, Joe Madden made a very good point in terms of his team needs to reset. That's fine. But right now, I don't know what resetting will do to a pitching staff that doesn't look like it's youthful and got some pop. I don't know if that's if you get the reset button, I don't know if you fix that. And that's the problem. So we went from an April where we said, my God, look at how loaded this team is.
They were talking
and God bless Theo
Yankees.
Epstein. God bless, yeah, exactly. They were talking about the 27 Yankees. And God bless Theo Epstein for coming right out and saying, we're not this good.
Right.
All right, so I like Theo. And at the time, I kind of went, that's Theo. That's what you should do when you're a general manager. You don't bring up expectations. You don't talk about how things are awesome and how things will stay that way. You always err on the side of caution, always. And so when I heard Theo say that, I was like, wow, that's GM speak. That's what all GMs say. But there was some truth behind it. I think Theo said, wait a minute. There are some things that this team is going to struggle with. And when we get more games under our belt and we go on those long road trips and when we have, no break and, I think he was seeing something. So here are the Cubs, now just one of a few really good teams in the National League, instead of being the team in the National League. And that's got to make Cubs fans a little nervous, because what they were playing with in August was real currency. That had value, the fact that the Cubs were that good, because you're right. They didn't look like they were going to lose very many series. They looked like they were going to be on pace for, 100-plus wins. I mean, it was looking great. You're right. The 27 Yankee comparisons were done by just about everybody, because they didn't look like they would lose and they would be winning these games and they looked youthful and Joe Madden was the right manager. But the struggles right now for the Cubs are real, and if I was a fan, I'd still be a little nervous. All right, we'll talk golf next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the Third Shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Well, this week we'll be getting the British Open underway at Royal Troon, and you know, a couple of days away from round number one, but we're going to get a little preview of that. Joe Passoff joins us from Golf Magazine to tell us what can expect. You guys probably know this is the tournament you wake up to on Sunday is the final round. You just get out of bed, and there's major championship golf on your TV. How are you, Joe? Thanks for joining us.
Tony, it's a pleasure to be with you. And, yeah, especially for West Coast folks to wake up at that hour is, it's positives and negatives.
Yeah, exactly. I've lived on both coasts, and I tell you, when you wake up and there's like the ending of the golf tournament, and you're like, wait a minute, where did this go? How did I miss this? Tell us a little bit about Royal Troon. In terms of this golf course, is this one of the more popular British Open venues?
I would say no. I would kind of put it in the middle of the British Open venues or Open Championship or whatever folks want to insist on. It's not particularly pretty, if you will. It is seaside, but there just aren't any really glorious views of the sea. A couple of times you get it, and you can climb on top of sand hills and get a little better view. But it's not a great-looking golf course, and in terms of that goes, it is a traditional links, but it just annoys the players in big-time competition because almost all the holes on the front nine run one way, and almost all the holes on the back nine run exactly opposite. And so if you're usually into the wind coming in almost the entire back nine, it makes for a great test and a worthy champion, but it can be a little bit repetitive.
Is this Open Championship course require a different skill? Meaning by, are we eliminating a couple of players because Troon demands you do something that some players just don't do very well?
I'm going to say no. It's not as quirky, not as funky as a few of the other Open venues. Absolutely, specifically Royal St. George's comes to mind in England. But there are a handful of others as well. If you look at past champions going back a long way, it really does reward the great ball strikers. And that's a huge positive, a huge plus for Royal Troon. It's not quite so quirky, not so funky in its bounces and slopes and swales, that it's going to eliminate a certain type of player or even say a high ball hitter. Especially because the greens are pretty benign. The tough part about Royal Troon is getting to the green in one piece, and you're not going to have to work like you do at the old course at St. Andrews in terms of putting.
One of the things about the British Open that I've always respected is how they really honor their champions. A guy like Ben Curtis can virtually disappear in America. Todd Hamilton can disappear. Are they still semi-celebrities over there when the Open Championship runs around?
Well, this is golf's oldest tournament, you know, oldest major, 1860 it popped up. And, if you got your name etched into the claret jug, it's something special. And even though the guys you mentioned, hard to pick them out of a lineup, even for a serious golf fan, they did something extraordinary at least once, and that was win that tournament. So I think that British golf fans really, really look at these folks with a great deal of reverence because golf is so central, especially to the Scottish psyche, that if you've done something well, you're a little bit of a hero for life.
How are the big three, or where we're going with the youth movement, how are they playing? And they should be favorites anyway, but do people particularly like them for this Open?
You know, Tony, it's funny. We had so much energy and enthusiasm with the big three going into the U.S. Open, and they kind of let us down.
Yeah.
They really let us down. Jason Day made a little bit of a comeback, in the last 2 days, but it's more muted this time. I don't think anyone can take away from the achievements of Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy. I got to put Jason Day clearly ahead of those two. Not only is he still the best player in the world, but he's finished top 10 both majors this year. He was tied for fourth in the Open, the British Open last year. Now you got Dustin Johnson, really joining them to make a true big four right now. And I think Day and Johnson have to be considered co-favorites.
Is length a factor at Truen? I mean, you mentioned Dustin Johnson. Is length going to be a factor at this tournament?
Great driving will be a factor at this tournament. I don't think length is all that much of an advantage. It looks like you've got to always contemplate, consider the weather and what the weather is going to do in any British Open. And if it's benign, that's when Rory took Royal Liverpool apart 2 years ago. Not much wind. When Louis Oosthuizen won at St. Andrews, he's a big driver, and he was incredible that year in 2010 when their weather just did not come into play. Forecast this year calls for 60 to 69 degrees, maybe 10 to 15 mile an hour winds all week, some rain. It's not bad at all, but it's not the kind of truly benign forecast that'll let a long hitter tear a course apart. Instead, it's going to be a ball striker.
Joe, they're going to be at Baltusrol in 2 weeks, and they just played the U.S. Open a couple of weeks ago because of the Olympics and moving the schedule. Is this going over well? I know it's once every 4 years, so it's not like it's happening every year. But these guys spend a lot of time preparing and getting mentally ready. Are they ready for a quick turnaround from majors overseas to a major in the United States?
Well, they're going to have to be. You know, they've known about this for a long while now. This isn't a surprise to them. I think it is going to be difficult. It's going to be challenging for some of the guys to really get up and get focused, to maintain that focus with all the different travel going back and forth, all the different emotions involved, especially for guys who are contending or winning. By the same token, I look back, and I'm a history buff. You know, in the 1960s, there were actually 3 years where the PGA was played the week after the British Open. And, you know, some guys could handle it. Jack Nicklaus in particular, you know, finished third in one and then won the next. Won one, but it did the other one, finished second place back-to-back once. That's Jack Nicklaus. That's what made him Jack Nicklaus. So I think there are going to be guys that understand how to pace themselves properly.
If I look at the Scottish Open today, is that an indicator of guys coming in playing particularly well? Do I have to pay attention to somebody that moved up a leaderboard in that tournament?
You know, if you're a betting man, it's not a bad idea to see who coped well with being over there and playing on a seaside golf course. I'm not sure anybody really enhanced their reputation going in. But we did see our old-time friend Phil Mickelson rebound with three really good rounds at the Scottish Open this morning to tie for 13th. And you remember, he won this thing 3 years ago and then went on to win the British Open the next week. Henrik Stenson, a great ball striker, also played three really good rounds to finish today at the Scottish Open. So I don't know that it's a perfect predictor at this point, but not bad if you're looking for dark horses.
You know, you bring up Phil, and I can remember years and years of people believing, man, he's never going to win this thing because it required a different type of game. Now that he's won it, does he become a factor? Because age doesn't seem to be a problem at the British Open. Does he become a factor for the next 5 or 6 years at this tournament?
Tony, that's a great point. This really is the major that age and even length is not that big of a deal. I think he's much more relaxed about playing in his tournament now that he, you know, has won it. And he also had a really nice finish, a tie for second a couple years before that. And interestingly, one of the few players in the field that played the last time it was at Truen in 2004, and he finished third. So here's a guy that is actually playing pretty well. He's had a very good, if inconsistent, 2016. And I just don't think there's a whole lot of pressure on him. He can come in and without having to hit driver all that often, play extremely well and contend at the British Open.
Joe Passoff, Golf Magazine. British Open starts Thursday at Royal Truen. Postage stamp, eighth hole. Great stuff. Joe Passoff, again, appreciate your time as always, my friend.
Great to be with you, Tony.
All right, coming up next, it was a rumor. It was reported, denied, but now it's come true. I'll tell you what that is next. I am Tony D. Through the Night, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D. on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Reporters, what was it? Probably a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month, couple of months ago. God, I lose track of time. I'm sorry. I'm getting older. A lot of people were saying, hey, UFC is going to get sold. UFC is being sold, and it's going to be sold for $4 billion. And Dana White denied it. And, you know, and this report was verified by a number of sources. And Dana White kept denying it. And guess what? It was sold. It's going to be sold for $4 billion. And you know what? Let me tell you something. I may not be the biggest UFC fan, but I absolutely 100% respect how this sport developed, how this sport came about, and how Dana White grew it. And look, those of you who are really into it, you may know some more of the, you know, the intricate details. Maybe there's some stuff that I'm just, you know, I look at it from just kind of on the periphery. But just seeing this sport grow and seeing this sport become what it is over the years. I worked with a lot of people that were into this very, very early, and it was very niche and not very, you know, I remember people talking about it, but I never thought it was going to take off. And I remember talking to people about it and why they liked it and why it was popular. And I kept getting the same answers for everybody. So, well, you know what? He's on to something, because it seems more and more people that I'm working with at radio stations, and I would go out and do remotes, and I would go out on remotes where we would cover the events on, you know, on pay-per-view and whatnot. And I saw the crowds getting bigger and bigger, and $4 billion to basically turn something rather new and be able to sell it for $4 billion is remarkable. Now, let me just make this clear. I know some of you will out there know the popularity of this sport and will go, oh, $4 billion. Yeah, of course. $4 billion is a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money. And for this to sell for $4 billion is a really big deal. That is great. Good for him. Now, I don't know what this means. And somebody can be more than happy to tell me what this means. Is Dana White going to stay on as president? Is he going to have still a role in this? Is he going to have even a small, maybe ownership role in this? Because maybe the sale, you know, is just a certain percentage of it, and White gets to keep a certain percentage of it. I have no idea. I don't know if the sport takes a dramatic turn. I don't know if that means it's bad. I don't know if it means it's good. Does the new group take it to the next level? I have no idea. Some of the rules or some of the way the infrastructure of the sport is, you know, depending on how fights are done and how fights are sold and all that stuff, do the new people come in and change a lot of things? I have no idea. So I can't tell you if this is going to be good. I can't tell you if this is going to be bad. All I know is from the details of taking something like this and turning it into a $4 billion industry, props to Dana White and anybody else that was involved in this.
From what I understand is Dana White will stay on as president. He's going to sell all his shares, but in the deal somehow, he's getting a smaller chunk back. So he owned 9%, I believe it was.
And that would probably, if I'm thinking the way I would do it, maybe it's not the way he does it, but the way I would do it, I'd want a little bit of quality control with that.
Yes, and that's right? the piece I read earlier was saying that he will stay as president and kind of the main guy who's making decisions based on the sport's best looking forward.
Yeah, because you don't want to take this and get really crazy and
right.
More WWE-ish, and next thing you know, it's like two clowns fighting, and they're like, people are dressing up and they're making characters, and you want to keep this like a real sport. You want to keep this like a legitimate sport. And if I'm Dana White, I don't want any entity to come in and mess around with talent and mess around with basically the like I said earlier, the infrastructure of the sport, how it works. So if I was a young UFC fighter, how I get into the sport, how I get into the ranks, how I move up to eventually someday get title fights, that doesn't change because of new ownership. Dana White still says there's a method to this madness, and I want to keep the method to the madness because this is what served us well. This is what made us great. If you come in and you start changing things up and you start sort of Hollywoodizing this sport, then I've got to be able to come in and have some control over it. So good for him, though, because $4 billion, like I said earlier, that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a lot of dough. That is a lot of dough for this. And I remember when I first heard about this, I remember going, wow, is it really worth $4 billion, or is that an overinflated price? And like you read more about it, and it, you know, it's, it looked like it still it carried that kind of value. But $4 billion is I know we throw around billions a lot because the Clippers sold for nearly two and all that stuff. But billions are a lot of money. That's a lot of dough. And this is good. That's good for him. Good for him. But, you know, like I said earlier, hats off to the reporters that had this. And Dana White did nothing wrong denying it. You don't admit, even if a reporter has it right, you don't admit a sale on, you don't admit and put the news out on a sale, something like this. You do not put it out on a reporter's time. You do it on your time. So if it means you deny, and even if people accuse you of lying, or you don't care, that is a piece of news you allow to escape when you want it to escape. You can still say a report, you know, that an entity broke the story. You can still say the media broke it. It doesn't have to come out some crazy fancy press conference. But you know, having worked in PR, you release that when you want to release that. You do not, under any circumstances, allow a report to go, and then you in a little bit of without thinking, you confirm that story, and then the cat's out of the bag. You can't do that. So good. But the reporters that broke that story, I'm glad. I see a lot of them on Twitter saying, we had this. This is what we reported. We had number of people. Darren Rovell is one of them. So we had five confirmed sources on this, and now it's a fact. So, hey, God bless UFC. $4 billion. That's great. Coming up next, SEC Media Days. It's all fun and games, but there's some serious issues within the conference. Even though they have the national champs, is the gap closing with the other conferences on the SEC dominance, quote unquote? We'll discuss that next, and Barrett Salee from Bleacher Report is going to be in Hoover, Alabama this week. Yahoo Sports Radio.